No, I'm not for sale.
Welcome back to the Stampede Blue Colts Cast, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, Matt Dainley. And today we're going to be getting into a little bit of what the Bengals bring to the table, both in this week four preseason matchup and as well kind of what they're looking forward to during the season. But first, let's jump into some Colts notes and some Colts news. The Colts did sign Darrell Richardson and placed another running back, George Wynn, on IR. They also signed DeMard Lorenz, and they waived Steven Robleski, who is a tight end. Neither one of these moves are obviously anything on the front end of the roster, both back end type moves. But what they are is they're just rounding out this roster as they get into the final game of the preseason. We don't really have a ton of stuff on Andrew Luck or anything like that today. What we do know is, and we've known this for a while, people are starting to, you know, come to the realization that he's not going to play in week one, but we've been talking about this for weeks. I have not expected him to play in week one for probably a month or better now, maybe 2 months. I don't really know how long it's been since we first said that, but it's been a long time coming that, you know, we expected him to miss at least a game or two of this season. I think we hadn't seen him throw. It's been very kind of cryptic from both the Colts coaching staff with Pagano and, you know, very hush on the other end from Ballard, other than him just saying that they're going to take him off the PUP before the season starts. So we don't really need a whole lot of that to give us the information that we need. We understand that Andrew Luck's not going to start week one. We understand that it's probably going to be Tolzien that starts. Hopefully Stephen Morris, at least, as far as I'm concerned, gives the Indianapolis Colts a better opportunity to win games, depending upon how many games he's out. But they are going to L.A. It would be nice to see Stephen Morris actually get the nod there. But Pagano has said that in this final four, or this final game of the preseason in week four, that they are all three going to play, quarterbacks, I mean. And I don't think that there's going to be a whole lot of guys left out of this. It sounds like, you know, some, I don't think a lot of the starters that are, you know, very important to this roster are going to be getting a lot of playing time. On the other hand, I think some of the backups and stuff will, at least that's what Pagano is saying. You know, I think that he, you know, you've got to fill four quarters and you can't do it all with a bunch of, you know, 40 through 90 ball players. So, I mean, they've got to end up putting some guys out on the field. I think it's possible that we may see, you know, a series out of the starters, even maybe we may see a few series out of the backups, and then we may see, you know, some backups sprinkled in there throughout the game with a lot of the deeper portions of the roster, both in the offensive line, the defensive line. I think a lot of the defensive line, actually, because of the sheer numbers that they have, some of the backups are going to have to play some snaps. I think the linebacker auditioning is going to be, you know, pretty intense. I think a lot of those guys are going to play. Sankey, I think that Jeremiah George is going to get a lot of time. I'm excited for that. And I think that Luke Rhodes might be getting some linebacker snaps, although he has been kind of relegated to the long snapper role. They still may use him just to fill a spot as far as this, because look, they don't want to risk Bostic or a couple other guys, you know, re-injuring anything as they head into week one. So that would probably be an option for them there. In the secondary, it looks like a lot of the guys that, you know, are going to be injured, like Vontae and them, those guys have made it kind of difficult for the Colts to use the back end guys here on the roster. And so I think that you'll see probably some of the backups there as well. But, you know, it's just going to be an interesting thing, because, like I said, they've got to fill four quarters of football, and whatever they deem necessary to use just to fill those four quarters is probably what they're going to do. Now, speaking of that secondary, Chuck Pagano also spoke about, you know, a couple guys like Nate Hairston, talking about, you know, you don't ever want to leave some of these guys out, you know, that may end up getting dinged up or whatever. But he says, when you're in this situation, that's why you've got 90-man roster right now. And young guys like Nate Hairston, who aren't out there today, they rested him. They rested him because he's been, you know, a trooper and has been fighting through some soreness and stuff like that. Quincy Wilson and Rashawn Melvin. There's a bunch of guys out there. They have also Culver and White who have picked up some snaps in practice. And those are opportunities for those guys to go out there and try to win a roster spot as well. I actually see Corey White possibly making a better shot at this roster than Culver. I think Culver would be a quality option for depth, and he might have to make the roster now. But Corey White adds some versatility at safety. He's played both positions in his pro career to this point, so I think that's interesting to talk about as well. Also, Coach was really high on what Henry Anderson brings. He said that he's confident and he trusts himself. He trusts the injury and in the leg and stuff, that he's been back to playing the way he once played before the injury. And then he says, I don't think from a production standpoint he'd sit there and tell you I'm making all the plays that I want to make, but those will come, the strength will come. You see he's always played great pad level and he's always played with great length, but you see the trust factor. And that's big for a guy like him who's coming off of an injury like that. That's one of the things that a lot of coaches constantly will say once they start to trust the whatever part of their body that they've injured, that's something that comes along, and when that comes along, that they can return to being successful, mainly because you always will favor those injuries and stuff. And in any time that you would have an ankle injury or anything like that, it was consciously, you know, something that you favored and played to, and you try not to. And when you forget about it, then you can play normally. It's a psychological thing, but it also, I mean, it's not just with, you know, low time sports. It's also with the pro guys. They've got to get it out of their head too. And that's, you know, a big part of it, especially when you have a knee injury, something that's major. Also talked about Eric Swoop, and they said that he's week to week, which typically means about a month for a guy. You know, he day to day usually means a week, week to week usually means a month. You know, some of these guys are going to make the roster who are injured and aren't going to be able to play. I would say probably 4 to 5 of the guys that are on the 53-man roster come the end of next week. Those are guys that are going to be on this roster but cannot play in week one. And that's a weird position to be in. Ryan Kelly being another one, Andrew Luck being another one. You know, there's going to be several guys that are in that position. And that leaves the Colts at a bit of a disadvantage, as if they weren't already. You know, that they've got five guys, you know, five of their seven inactives for week one are going to end up being hurt anyways. I mean, I guess you could say that's a good thing, that you've got everybody that's healthy is going to be active week one, but it's just a very, very weird situation to be in for the Indianapolis Colts. That's about all the news we've got today. We're going to have James Rapine on here, who covers the Cincinnati Bengals, and we're going to have him on here in just a minute, and he's going to talk to us a little bit about what the Cincinnati Bengals are looking to, what kind of guys they have deep on the roster that we should pay attention to, and so on and so forth. So stay tuned for James, and we'll be back in a moment. And we're back with James Rapine of ESPN 1530 and host of Locked On Bengals. James, what's going on, man? Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Good to have you back again. We've done this a couple times. Lots of fun. Today, we're going to get into a little bit about the Cincinnati Bengals, the Colts, and Bengals will meet for the preseason finale this Thursday, which is today, ultimately. And we've got a lot to go through, so let's kick it off. Is there anything first and foremost that you wanted to touch on before we get into the game and what the Bengals are expected to do this season?
Not really. I think that anytime the Bengals and the Colts play each other in the preseason, we know that the preseason's ending, which is good because it means that real football is right around the corner.
Absolutely. Great point and great way to start it, because that's exactly what I think not only myself, but any Colts fans and therefore Bengals fans as well are probably thinking. So I wanted to ask you a little bit about some of the guys that are on your roster right now. The Burfict and his suspension just got dropped from 5 games to 3. Mixon, you know, troubled guy with his issues, and some of the other rookies that are on there, and some of the other players in general. How is the coach dealing with a lot of that, and how has he managed to kind of keep their off the field stuff kind of under wraps a little bit, regardless of coming in with some serious issues?
Yeah, I think it's interesting, because the national perception and perception outside of Cincinnati is that the Bengals have a locker room full of those type of guys with off the field issues. But and Burfict gets lumped into that. Vontaze Burfict is the heel, the ultimate heel, him and Pac-Man Jones of the Bengals. Mm-hmm. But honestly, for very different reasons. Vontaze Burfict has been perfect off the field. He hasn't done anything as a professional off the field wrong. Is he a dirty player? Yeah, he's a dirty player. there's no doubt about it. He pushes the boundary. I think that this hit in preseason week two against the Kansas City fullback, I don't really think that was that dirty. I've defended him on that one. But his reputation is what it is, and that's why he has the suspension. Outside of that, Adam Jones off the field, of course, certainly a concern, and he's suspended for the first game against the Ravens. And then you mentioned Joe Mixon and his off-the-field issue that took place a couple years ago. Yeah, it's certainly concerning, but I will say so far, everyone I've talked to inside that locker room has embraced Joe. Has had nothing but good things to say on and off the record about him. So there are a couple guys, but mostly it's Adam Jones off the field that has issues. So Marvin Lewis does have some egos to massage and make sure they're okay. But he came out yesterday, or actually 2 days ago, in his press conference and defended Vontaze Burfict. And Burfict's camp as well is kind of disappointed that it was only reduced to 3 games. They thought it should be 0. Mm-hmm. So as far as that goes, I think it's more of a, man, we're still missing 3 games. He's still out for 3 games. But overall, Marvin Lewis does have to manage that, because that's certainly an issue. And Adam Jones, his off the field is an issue. And then there's always the concern about Joe Mixon. But outside of that, I really don't see many guys that Marvin Lewis has to worry about, you know, when they step away from Paul Brown Stadium. And I take that back. I don't even think you have to worry about Vontaze. So it's really Joe, because he's young and because of his history, and that Adam Jones from, you know, obviously past issues that he's had. There's been a ton of them.
Yeah, it really is interesting, like you said, to kind of get those mixed in, where it's on the field, dirty player, but it's presumed that off the field, you know, dirty human almost, and that's just not the case in a lot of those situations. But that, like you said, there is a lot of ego massaging going on, and that's something that it seems as though they've done a pretty good job of so far. You guys have a very interesting group of rookies, as far as I'm concerned. Mixon, mostly considered the most talented running back in the draft, to be quite honest. Ross, Lawson, my man Jordan Willis, really liked him a lot, actually, in the draft process. A lot of people, I met a lot of feedback on that, because a lot of people said, well, he doesn't bend, or he's just not got this or that. I just saw him as an absolute game wrecker, to be quite honest. And I hate saying that, because anytime I use a metaphor, I feel like I've fallen into Coach Pagano's shoes or something like that, because he's like the king of metaphors. But he just really was one of those guys that I felt was going to be excellent in the NFL. And what are you seeing, and how do you personally project some of these guys?
I think that you're right. The Bengals nailed the draft. I mean, that they added a guy in John Ross who's very unique, super talented, fast, can run great routes. And they added all that, and he's going to be a complement in this offense because they have so many weapons. Mm-hmm. Joe Mixon, the football player, is, in my opinion, probably the best running back in this class, like you said. He's just got the ability to do it all. He's a big back, 230 pounds, can run, has great feet, can catch out of the backfield, was a good blocker in college. And from what I've seen, he's picked up the pass blocking schemes really well. And honestly, like if you didn't know, obviously, that the incident in that Oklahoma, you would look at him and say, man, that's the next superstar in the NFL. Mm-hmm. Like he just has that persona, that personality. And he's not going to, you know, brag to reporters about how good he is, but you can tell that the room isn't too big for him. And some rookies, that isn't the case. So Joe Mixon is a guy that this team's going to rely on a lot this year, along with he's going to be a big part of the running game, along with Giovanni Bernard and Jeremy Hill. And then you mentioned the pass rushers that they drafted, and Jordan Willis and Carl Lawson. And those are two guys that in the preseason and training camp both flashed. And they really needed them, too. Those are two players. A lot of people here, I was on the John Ross train in the first round, and I liked the value they got with Joe Mixon in round two. A lot of people here in Cincinnati wanted them to take a pass rusher with the 9th overall pick. Mm-hmm. And they obviously waited till round 3 and 4 And it looks like it's going to pay off because both guys have been productive in the preseason. Carl Lawson has just showed tremendous athletic ability. You mentioned Jordan Willis and people criticizing his bend. There's no concern with Lawson as far as him being able to bend around the edge and get by defenders. And Jordan Willis has been great. The moment preseason started, it's like the switch went on. Because in training camp, the practices, you're not going full go. The Bengals have had very little, if any, honestly, live sessions where they were tackling. So you couldn't really tell if Jordan Willis, you know, what he was doing, how much pressure he would get. But the moment preseason week one started, he was getting pressure. So those first four picks the Bengals had all seem to be guys that not only are going to pay off in the future, but should contribute this season.
And let me ask you about another thing about the pass rushers real quick, about Lawson and Will specifically, because, like you said, third and fourth round, Colts got, Terrell Basham in that area as well. And I personally have not been much of a fan of what we've seen from him, because basically a lot of his – I'm not seeing a lot of pass rush anything with him, and he was one of the guys I also liked in the pre-draft. So it's not like I'm trying to find a reason to knock on him. But why do you think Lawson and Willis are looking successful? Is it scheme related, you think, or is it just that they're that good of a prospect?
Well, it's interesting because in preseason I was at basically every training camp. I was at basically every practice, and Carl Lawson stood out right away within 10 minutes of watching practice. You could tell Rocky Boyman won a Super Bowl with the Colts. He covers the Bengals and is a host here locally in Cincinnati. And he came to a practice and he was like, "Hey, James, Carl Lawson stands out right away." Within like 5 minutes, he noticed Lawson and just him making plays and his athletic ability. So he pops right away and just stands out, which is interesting because he's the fourth round pick. Willis was the third round pick drafted ahead of Carl Lawson and didn't notice much of him. In fact, there was a little narrative on Bengals Twitter before the preseason games actually started. It was like, "Have you heard anything about Willis? Haven't seen much out of him." But then the lights came on, and he instantly got pressure on the Tampa Bay quarterbacks week one of the preseason, and then Kansas City. And he's been just consistent the whole time, either getting a sack or getting pressure. So scheme-wise, I mean, the Bengals are using them in the right way, putting them on the edge, especially a Carl Lawson, who's listed as a linebacker, but he's there to be a pass rusher. So you got to put him on the end and let him do what he does best. And but ultimately, I think they're just really nice young prospects that have shown something in the preseason. Now it comes the test after today against the Colts. It's going to be what do they do in the regular season, which I know a lot of fans are optimistic about. But until they have success, you know, right now it's just optimism. It's just potential, until week one or later this year.
Yeah, absolutely. What about like guys like Billings? How have they come in to the new, you know, with their new surroundings and filled in?
Andrew Billings, it's interesting because he certainly offers more than Domantas Peko offered as far as an athlete, as far as strength. He's younger. And he's going to be, I think he'll be better against the run. I think he'll help them just next to Geno Atkins. But he needs snaps. I mean, he's basically a rookie. He was out all last year, missed a lot of camp, missed preseason. So it's just going to be more so getting him snaps, getting him experience, and seeing what he can do with those snaps. So far this preseason, he's had some issues. He's had some mistakes. But he's also, you've noticed him. And it's just getting him that experience next to Geno Atkins, getting him that experience in the rushing attack. And once he does that, I think the potential's there. I really like what the Bengals have done on the defensive line because they've gotten younger in a hurry with Billings returning, with Lawson, with Willis. And then they also traded for a guy named Chris Smith in the offseason, who's a fourth-year player. They traded with the Jaguars, and he's also bolstered their pass rush. So they went from a lot of older guys, the Domantas Pekos and players like that, and it seems like a lot of the younger guys are not only going to make the roster but contribute early on, and that's really important for a Bengals defensive line that struggled a large part of last season.
Well, let's jump on the other side of the line there and talk about, like, you guys had some offensive line, you know, guys take off. What about Jake Fisher and Ogbuie? What are your thoughts about them? I mean, can you expect them to really kind of ease the issues of those offensive line departures this offseason with what they bring?
It's going to be hard, right? And it is interesting because it happens all the time here, Matt, is they get, because they were drafted in the same draft class, because they went first round, second round, mm-hmm. everyone says, oh, Cedric Ogbuie, Jake Fisher, how do they look? Well, Jake Fisher's never really been given an opportunity to start, especially training camp on. He was moved early on in his career. They moved him around the line, and he was a backup at a bunch of different positions. They played him at tight end a little bit because they liked his athleticism. They didn't know what to do with him because they had so many players on the line ahead of him. Well, now he's being relied upon, and he gained about 30 pounds this offseason, and he looks good. You see the potential, and you see a guy that could potentially play one of the tackle positions. Right now he's the starting right tackle, but I could see him moving. I think he has the athleticism to move to left tackle. Cedric Ogbuie, he does struggle. So Jake Fisher, I think his stock is rising, if I had to give a barometer for that. Now, the first round pick of the 2015 draft, Cedric Ogbuie, who was the starting right tackle last year, now moved to left tackle. His, and I say this in air quotes, natural position is left tackle. He looks better than he did last year, but he was awful last year.
Right.
So better isn't good. Better right. isn't okay. He just looks, I mean, they're having to chip a lot on his side and give him help. And when you're looking at guys on the schedule, like a J.J. Watt, like a Jadeveon Clowney, you now have Myles Garrett twice a year. I don't know if Cedric Ogbuie, he's the left tackle of the future. They need to at least make him competent. It's good to see that they're giving him help, and hopefully they can survive the season with him at left tackle, Jake Fisher at right tackle. If not, there's not a lot of depth behind him. So Cedric Ogbuie, he's better than last season, but that's not saying much. Jake Fisher, I'm optimistic he'll be a pretty good tackle in this league.
And how about Kevin Minter? He's also another offseason addition that, you know, was kind of, I wouldn't say that he was, you know, highly sought after necessarily around the league, but there were some linebacker needy teams such as the Colts that were looking for some guys like Kevin Minter, and you guys ended up landing him. How has he shown for you guys so far?
He's been an upgrade. I think their linebacking group before this Vontaze Burfict suspension was going to be so much more improved when they took the field against the Baltimore Ravens, because what they have now is you have a Vontaze Burfict obviously leading the charge. And I know a lot of people hate when I say this, but he's one of the best linebackers in the game, and he's in shape and in a contract year. And you line up another guy, 27-year-old Kevin Minter, who has a lot to play for. He signed a 1-year deal here, a lot to prove, playing for a big contract. Well, I like that, those two, a 1-2 combo. And so Kevin Minter, to me, I'm still optimistic about it, even though Burfict's out for a couple games, that this linebacking group is just much improved. Minter's a big part of that. Second-year player Nick Vigil's a big part of that. He's an athlete, a guy that's just going to add a lot of speed and athleticism to the linebacking core that the Bengals haven't had. They've invested in the past in guys like A.J. Hawk, past their prime type players, Carlos Dansby last year. This year they got Kevin Minter, who's 27 years old, and paired him with Vontaze Burfict, who's in his prime, and Nick Vigil, who's rising. So I like Minter. He hasn't made any, you know, huge plays this preseason, but I just think he's just such an upgrade. They just need him to be pretty good next to Burfict. They need Nick Vigil to be pretty good next to Burfict, and I think both of those guys, Minter and Vigil, could certainly do that.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting, too, with your linebacking core. Vincent Ray is the most tenured guy in the entire group, and he's only got 7 years in, you know, and Burfict, for that mm-hmm. matter, has 6 years in. And is as hard as he is going, you know, right now, it seems like that's a pretty young group that has a lot of upside. So that's definitely an area that the Colts are going to need, you know, to try to do their best against, because that's a pretty young, strong group for sure. When we get into this game Thursday, who are some of the guys? Now we can't really expect maybe some backups not to play in this game, but who's a guy that's not necessarily going to be a starter right now, maybe a backup or even, you know, just a rotational piece? Who's somebody that we'll need to watch out for at any position on Thursday?
I think that the biggest things on offense that I'll be watching is the Bengals are seven deep at wide receiver. And while I think they probably do keep seven, Cody Core and Alex Erickson would be that seventh guy. Now, what do they do? Are they productive? I think they're both going to make the roster, but I'll be watching it. Does one of them fumble? Alex Erickson's big on special teams. Does he have a bad return or turn it over? Does Cody Core have a drop? He dropped a touchdown last week. Those could be make or break things that keep them on the roster or don't. I think both are safe, but it's still an interesting thing to keep an eye on. I know I'll be watching for that. The fourth string running back battle is interesting. The Bengals could go with just three guys and not keep a fourth running back, or they could keep Trey Carson. It appears like Trey Carson will, after a productive offseason and in preseason, will make the team with Cedric Pierman. They put Cedric Pierman on IR earlier this week. So if Trey Carson has a good game, I think he solidifies a roster spot in the final 53. One other thing on offense is Jeff Driscoll, and he's the third quarterback on the depth chart behind Andy Dalton and A.J. McCarron. He's performed pretty well this preseason, had a big week one. The highlight went viral when he made two Tampa Bay Buccaneers run into each other and ran into the end zone. So does he make it? He made the 53-man roster last year when they claimed him off of waivers from San Francisco when San Francisco cut him. They like him a lot. But again, it'll just be interesting to see what they do. Now, I will note this. It does help a little bit, at least, that Vontaze Burfict is suspended for three games. That gives you a roster spot. Adam Jones is suspended for a game. It gives you a roster spot. So they will have a couple spots where guys could make the team for a week, for a couple weeks, that wouldn't necessarily make the final 53 if those guys weren't suspended. On the other side of the ball, on defense, I'm going to be looking at a couple veterans on that defensive line. We talked about all these young guys, Jordan Willis, Chris Smith. Obviously, you got Andrew Billings, who we talked about. Well, does a Wallace Gilberry make the team, who's a veteran, who's been here, left, came back? What about a Will Clark? He's a defensive end in his fourth year, hasn't been that productive. And it'll be interesting to see how that plays out, because it's clear the Bengals' youth movement, whether they like it or not, the youth is standing out on that defensive line. And there are some guys like a Michael Johnson. I think Michael Johnson makes the team, but he is a veteran. And is he worth the $4 million they're paying him, or do they decide to give the reins to the young guys and let the young guys just run wild starting week one? That's certainly something worth watching if you're a Bengals fan.
Interesting. Now, they wouldn't risk, I mean, Jeff Driscoll waiving him, would they? I mean, if they intend to keep him on the roster, period, would they really risk waiving him at all? I mean, would they risk using one of those extra spots, I guess, per the suspensions, just to waive him after week two?
I don't think so. Yeah, that's the thing, is I don't think he would be one of those guys, but maybe you keep a Wallace Gilberry for an extra week or an extra couple weeks, or you keep Tony McCray, a corner, Ben Abin-Wickery, a corner for a week or two. And the other thing, Matt, and this is hilarious almost, because the Bengals last year, Mike Nugent was, after a really good career here in Cincinnati, struggled mightily last year. And it was sad to see, because I tried to defend him as much as I could, but you know how it is when a kicker's missing kicks, fans just hate it. he becomes the villain.
Right.
And he was such a good guy here and made so many game-winning kicks. And it was just really good for, so, you know, 5 or 6 years of consistent play. Well, this year, they went from not having a consistent kicker to having two kickers. Randy Bullock was signed late last year, and he's been perfect this preseason.
Which is
fun. He's 5 for 5. Yeah, he's 5 for 5.
Because of his past.
Five teams in the past 3 years. So he's been on five teams in the past 3 years, and is out-kicking Jake Elliott, who they drafted in the fifth round, who I thought was a sure bet to make the roster. And I had seen, oh, well, why is Randy Bullock getting more kicks than Jake? And I was like, man, they might just be doing that to get him a shot, give him a shot somewhere else. They know Jake Elliott's going to do it. Well, last week, Randy Bullock kicked a 53-yard field goal. Yeah. Ends up 5-for-5 so far going into week four of the preseason. Jake Elliott's 3-for-4, and in the same game, he misses a 45-yard field goal. So now you're like, oh, man, is this closer than you think? So what seemed like a sure thing, now there's a kicking battle, and I think that's honestly one of the more interesting battles going into the Colts game, because if Elliott misses again, he really could be out of it now. And if Bullock hits another 50-plus yarder, can you really cut him if you're the Bengals? It's certainly an interesting dilemma to go from zero kickers essentially last year to have two pretty accurate ones this year.
Right, and I'm going to help your listeners out for, you know, the Cincinnati side of this. It's going to be Elliott winning it because Bullock does not kick well in Indianapolis. I'll just leave that out for you. So he's missed plenty for the Texans in the past. I think that you guys are going to end up seeing Elliott make all of his, and I think you're going to end up seeing some real shank jobs out of Bullock, you know, this week if he gets in a couple opportunities. Just you know, a little premonition there that's going on. But
yeah, and I felt that way, Matt, for so long. I'm like, man, 5 teams, 3 years, he's going to miss. I talked to some people in Houston, and they were like, dude, he was awful here. There's no way. And he's been great.
Yeah,
it's like been crazy. This preseason, he's been better than Jake Elliott.
It's funny because when you hear a guy's name like that you've known and you've listened to in the past or heard and then seen, you know, and you keep seeing, you know, like you said, the 53-yarder he kicked. He's been good from deep. And he's been making everything, and it's just something you're like, oh, man, is that, you know, has he just got his head right now, or is it just, you know, something that happens, you know, just periodically, and it just all goes downhill at some point in, you know, year one or year two of a different team?
Yeah, and that's the thing is, if they think that Randy Bullock is going to be the man for the job, they should keep him. But that means you're cutting a fifth-round pick and a guy that you thought was going to be the future for a while. So that's just one of those interesting, who would have thought a kicker debate, you know, a kicker battle would be so interesting, but it certainly is going into the final preseason game.
Yeah, that's funny. We actually had one until last week. The Colts cut Jeff Locke and end up keeping Rigoberto Sanchez on the roster, young guy, undrafted. And they had given Jeff Locke 1.25 guaranteed. So there was some money down the drain, but, you know, ended up finding out who's better and who can offer more. So give me, before we get out of here, one guy on this roster who is the best ball player who won't make the roster.
Oh, that's good. That's really good. The best ball player that won't make the roster. Okay. You stumped me. I'm going to go with, though, especially – they can only keep one kicker. I think they're going to keep 7 wide receivers, or it would be one of the wide receivers. I think they're going to keep 3 quarterbacks, so it's not going to be one of the quarterbacks. I'm going to go with, and it's gonna shock you, I think, but I think it'll be Jake Elliott. I think they're going to have to move on from Jake Elliott, and Randy Bullock's going to be fine against the Colts. And if Bullock is perfect and has multiple 50-plus yard field goals in the preseason, and Jake Elliott's missed one and has been inconsistent in practice, well, then he's not as good. So I think that'll be it. They'll have to cut, which a fifth-round pick isn't that high, but it's also rare where you just move on from a fifth-round pick a few months after spending it on, especially a position like a kicker. But I'm going to go with kicker. I think Jake Elliott, he'll get a job quick, but I think he'll be cut. He's not going to make the roster.
So out of all these guys in the secondary, you think that there's none of them that stand out or anything like that that are end up being on the streets?
Yeah, no, I mean, not really. I mean, the secondary will be ultimately Adam Jones, William Jackson, Darquez Dennard, Kavari Russell, Dre Kirkpatrick, Josh Shaw, Ben Abenwicker. He's a journeyman. He's played for the Panthers for a little while. He could make the roster for a week or two, but I think ultimately they'll move on from him. The receivers, I think all of them make it. I know this is a really boring answer. I mean, the other one could be like a defensive lineman. I think that Wallace Gilberry or a Marcus Hardison. And Marcus Hardison's a younger guy who's flashed in the preseason before, but hasn't done anything in the regular season. So those are two guys they could move on from as well. I don't see both of them making it, put it that way. I mean, they just have too much ahead of them. Will Clark, I know I mentioned him before, but he's a guy as well. it's just going to be interesting to see how they do it, because either Gilberry or Clark is probably gone. And that wouldn't have been my prediction 3 weeks ago. But yeah, with the depth, what we've seen from the younger guys and the contributions they've gotten, I think they've earned a spot on the roster.
Yeah, it kind of interested me earlier when you mentioned Gilberry and that he could be gone. I mean, he's been a stalemate, but then, you know, he's 32 years old, and that's, you know, that's part of the game. That happens. You know, guys that are 30-plus often see the streets at some point, especially with an influx of talent at their position. Who is give me another guy who's kind of going to make this roster purely out of positional need as opposed to being one of the more talented guys on the roster.
Real quick, one more answer to the last question. Marquise Flowers, that would have been a guy that could have potentially got cut, but they traded him to the Patriots. Mm. So that's a guy that they traded for a late round pick that you would have expected to make the roster, but they traded him. So clearly he probably wasn't going to make it. Right. But one guy that's going to make it purely on what? Sorry, I forgot your question.
On positional value. That's all right. On positional value as opposed to being one of the better players on the team.
Oh, I think that would be a Jeff Driskel. Okay. I mean, I think he's I think he's good. I think he's a good backup.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, if he was another position where you only need to keep two, why would you keep three? Right. You know, it's just one of those things where he's going to be the third quarterback simply because they do like him, but simply because it's good to have three quarterbacks that you trust.
Mm-hmm.
Does he belong in an NFL roster somewhere? Yeah. How many teams actually carry three quarterbacks all the time? Right. I mean, nowadays, it's not that many. Do the Colts?
No, not typically, but I think they will this year.
Yeah, or they should this year with Luckert.
Right, yeah, I think they don't have much of a choice.
Yeah.
And I honestly, truly believe, depending on if Luck is going to be out for, you know, multiple weeks, you know, then they are going to need to carry three because they're going to have, you know, a realistic competition even for in week one. You know, if Tolzien starts, then they're going to have, and he plays terribly, you know, and Luck's still out in week two, then they're going to probably give Steven Morris a go and see if he can be, you know, a difference maker as far as while Luck's out. So, I mean, I don't think they have much of a choice, at least for the first few weeks.
Yeah, no, I agree completely. But yeah, I would say Jeff Driskel simply because he offers a little bit of upside. They appear to like him and trust him, and, simply because he's a quarterback, he's going to get the benefit over someone else.
Mm-hmm. And we'll finish off again, James Rapine, thanks for joining us, man. Appreciate your insight. But before we head out, I'm going to ask you about a couple of the guys that are most important to this roster, Andy Dalton and AJ Green. What do you expect to see from them this year, given their circumstances?
Oh, I expect them to be lights out. Say what you want about the offensive line. The offensive line struggled last year. And AJ Green and Andy Dalton were having one of their best seasons together. Mm-hmm. Just that connection alone. AJ Green, before he was injured, he got injured against Buffalo in week 11, I believe. He was on pace for 1,800 yards, and he was having the best season of his career, and he was dominating despite teams double-teaming him and doing whatever they needed to do or tried to do to stop him. They couldn't stop him. So his demeanor's changed as well. I think he is realizing how good he is and that he needs to be the man. And that doesn't necessarily mean put up the biggest numbers of his career, but just poised, be a leader. And when it's time to go make a play, he's going to go make the play. And I think he might not admit this, but when you see someone in your draft class that's drafted a couple spots behind you, like Julio Jones, and they've both ended up being great players in the NFL, make the Super Bowl, that's got to motivate him. So, right. So I think that probably got under his skin a little bit too. So I expect a big year out of them, regardless of the offensive line concerns, simply because they're both in their prime. They played their whole careers together, and AJ Green's just that damn good. I mean, he's amazing. So mm-hmm. they should put up numbers this year.
Absolutely, James. Thank you for joining me tonight, man, or today. Sorry, I keep saying tonight. Interested to see what we see today with both the Cincinnati Bengals and the Indianapolis Colts. Should be, for guys like us, an interesting game to kind of, so that we can divvy through and kind of manage what we feel to be the back end guys of each 53-man roster, respectively. But a lot of people aren't going to watch this game just because it is what it is. On the other hand, we've got a lot of guys to figure out. You've got a lot of guys to figure out. So hope you enjoy it, and thanks for joining me tonight.
Absolutely, Matt. Anytime, and good luck. I hope Andrew Luck comes back soon, because honestly, I think he's a great player, and I hate to see great players injured. So, especially at the quarterback position. So, I hope he gets back soon, man.
I feel the same way. I hate seeing quarterbacks in general, starting quarterbacks, get hurt, because it just never feels like a real team, regardless of what team it is. You know, it doesn't seem like it's the full Monty, so to speak, with whoever it is. So, I'm definitely pulling for Luck to get back sooner rather than later as well. All of you listeners out there, thank you guys so much for everything you've done getting this show to where it's at. Make sure you guys are continuing to do the reviews and the ratings on iTunes. Those reviews are scooping up quickly. We're almost up to our second jersey giveaway. Keep that up. I will announce the jersey giveaway of the first 50 this coming week sometime, and we'll get that out to you guys as soon as possible. So thank you guys all for listening, and I'll talk to you next time right here on the Colts Cast.